Welcome to your Friday postgame. I am your host, of course, Malcolm Flesher. And with me today, Steve-O, a regular here on the Friday postgame. Hasn't been in a, you know.
I haven't been a regular lately.
But he's back.
I'm back.
He's tanned, he's rested, he's put on about 10 pounds.
I have, 15 maybe.
We'll find out why. But the real excitement.
Wait, please say none of those things about me. Except for tan. You can say tan.
Hannah Cranston, she must have lost the 15 pounds that Steve gained because she looks great.
I think it from her, yeah.
Hannah Cranston, of course you know her from Think Tank, intermittent main show duties and post games, and also Cracker Jack Facebook Originals.
Yeah.
One of our the stable of superstars. And when I say stable, don't read into that. Of a superstar Facebook Original producers.
I think enough people on those Facebook videos call me horseface that you've just contributed to that.
They call you horseface?
Yeah. A lot. That comes up a lot.
Listen, like Julia Roberts, Nancy Kerrigan, just having a horseface is not that, you know, you can be successful.
All right,
I'll
take it.
Is it an insult or is it a compliment?
No,
it's a real
question. I think it's meant to be an insult. But
you don't. I mean, even
but horses
your features,
are beautiful. No,
they're beautiful animals.
They're majestic creatures. That's how I'll take it. Thank you, guys.
Seems like I wish somebody said I was hung like a horse. Well, I don't see what's the problem.
Okay, I feel sexually harassed.
First about your weight.
Yes.
It's
a hostile work environment, Malcolm.
Can you sexually harass your own boss? How does that work?
I think you can.
You can always try. We're pioneers here at TYT. and so we're excited to have Hannah with us. For those of you who are not regulars for the Friday post game, we do it a little differently here. We record on Thursday, so if anything happens or has happened in the intervening 24 hours when you're watching this and when we tape it, we're sorry, but we'll cover it next week, or maybe it won't be important enough. But last time, I think it was the healthcare vote happened, the skinny repeal, and so we didn't discuss it because we had taped beforehand. But that's why. But we're hoping you're going to have a great weekend, and we can kick it off. And what better way to kick it off than with vacation photos? Oh, we don't have vacation photos. Stories of Steve's travels and where he's been. So we're going to start with that. And Steve even got a little game for us. But tell us a little bit about where you went and what you did.
So it was the longest vacation I've ever taken, I think. We're gone for 2 weeks and a couple of days, my whole family. We flew to London, spent a week there. Then we flew to Pisa, and we stayed in a town called Pietrasanta in Italy. And we did all of like Tuscany. So we're in Cinque Terre for a day. We're down in Lucca. We're in Florence. Forte de Marmi is right next to Pietrasanta. Forte de Marmi is like their version of South Beach. It's like a cool beach town that Italians go to. So there aren't that many foreign tourists there. And while I was there, I got to meet up with Lucas Lilyholm, Noreen Mustafa, James Gannon.
You could have used that photo.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I could use that photo. Yeah.
Steve was reluctant to use family photos because, you know, his kids and so on and so forth. And also documenting the weight gain from London to, you know, Italy. He didn't want to see, that.
Okay.
Yet.
It was not my fault that I gained all that weight. It's the gelato's fault.
Yeah.
The gelato was so delicious, I had to have it 3 times a day.
I get it.
There's nothing I could do.
I get it.
It's delicious.
I've been to Italy. Yeah. I understand.
Yeah. By the way, this morning my wife said to me, yeah, your belly has gotten larger. And she tried to say it in such a nice way.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, I think I'm getting fat. She's like, well, your belly has gotten bigger. I was like, yes, it has. By the way, today's our 21st anniversary.
Wow, congrats.
That's 21 amazing. Years of this. That's what she got.
You mean,
how lucky can our girl get?
Today is or yesterday was?
Thursday.
Okay.
August 3rd.
August 3rd. Yeah. All right, congratulations.
Thank you.
And what were the highlights, the lowlights, you know, without revealing too. Do you want to do your game first and then tell us?
Yes.
Steve sort of prepared a game for, well, by which
this
I mean.
This is the most preparation I've ever done for postgame.
He emailed me some text to put into graphic form, and he's got a quiz for us. We're going to play about his trip. Oh, I better distribute.
We're getting quizzed on your vacation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, this is a segment that Malcolm has invented called the Weekly World News.
Yeah.
Where he asks a question about different parts of the world, and then he would discuss it, and that's how he presents the news from that part of the world instead of just talking about it. So let's roll the graphic.
So the first one, it's all the questions and answers, and then we don't have the individual answer like we normally do.
It's not all
so
professional.
I have limited resources for this. So Irma, do we have the first graphic from Steveson?
Where's the Weekly World News intro?
No, it's not Weekly World News. Weekly World News. It's that good. You want to see it over and over and over again. All right, so
sorry for diluting the brand, Malcolm. He's mad because this shitty version of Weekly World News isn't up to par with his version.
The truth is, you've been on a number of not vacations but trips recently, and I wanted to put together a package just that Dave Pillar has his obituaries. Okay. I wanted to put together a package of just like Dave's or Steve's travels and something like that.
Okay,
and so you would be uniquely brand. These stories that you do, and to have you have to, it's not diluting my brand, it's really bringing your vacation stories down to so anyway, let's go to the first question though, and Steve can read it for us. We have it, Irma? There we go.
What was the best thing about London? Westminster Abbey, Tower of London, London Eye, and Steve's British accent.
Or Steve's British accent. I think I have.
Okay, I have my answer.
Yeah, I have my answer also.
And by the way, there's obviously no correct answer. Like, it's just my opinion, man.
I know Hannah's wrong.
Yeah, the answer is Westminster Abbey.
That's A.
So, which one was that, A?
Yeah.
Westminster Abbey was awesome. Yeah, it was, first of all, massive. I couldn't get over how large the whole building is, and the amount of detail and all, it was just incredible. And there's a lot of history there. There's a lot of famous people buried there. What I thought was very interesting is that Charles Darwin is buried there. Mr. Evolution. I mean, he was
Mr. Evolution.
Yeah. He, the church hates him.
4 years running, he won the Mr. Evolution contest. Charles Darwin's like,
Oliver Cromwell is buried there. The unknown soldier from one of the World Wars, I already forgot, is buried there. It's just a beautiful, beautiful place. It's majestic. And my first question whenever I go to beautiful buildings in Europe is, hey, what happened during the war? Did the Nazis bomb it?
Yeah.
It turns out Hitler didn't bomb it. You know why? Thankfully to all of us, Hitler was overconfident. And he was convinced he was going to win and have a 1,000-year reign. So he didn't want to bomb nice places. He's like, that's gonna be mine anyway. Why destroy it? We'll just take it later.
Well, I mean, it's true. They didn't knock down the Arc de Triomphe, and there's a famous image of Hitler standing on the top of it in Paris after he conquers Paris. It's not as impressive when you stand on a pile of rubble.
Yeah, exactly. But Westminster Abbey was just incredible. The London Eye is a giant Ferris wheel. It's a Ferris wheel, whatever. And the Tower of London was actually a very close runner-up. That was a pretty cool place too, and that's where they did some of the executions. I learned about Henry VIII. He had many wives. He had six wives. The first one. So here's how you remember what happened to those six wives: divorced, executed, died. Divorced, executed, survived. That's how the six of them go. So the first one was Catherine of Aragorn. And then the second, Aragorn is a character from Lord of the Rings. Very different. Second was Anne Boleyn, and the rest nobody cares.
So he had a pattern.
The third one was Jane Seymour, I think. That's her name. Yeah.
And she's still acting, I think.
Yeah, she's an actor. Yeah, she's very talented.
I loved her.
It's a good thing she survived. Yeah. I thought she died. Yeah.
Dr. Quinn. She was Dr. Quinn, medicine woman.
Very, very talented.
Yeah.
So if you guys go to London, obviously you're going to do all this stuff, but Westminster Abbey should be top of the list.
I don't think I went to Westminster Abbey when I was in London, though.
That was a mistake.
Yeah, well, that was my decision.
You didn't go through all the letters. I want your British accent.
Oh.
That's the one I voted for.
Yeah, it's not a winner.
So the British accent was awful, okay?
Let's hear it.
My kids are mortified. And it was inadvertent. I didn't mean to do a British accent. It just would come out of me. I'm just trying to fit in. I'm trying to be helpful to them. And
there's not like a language barrier, Steve.
I know.
Are you kidding? Have you been? Have you talked to some of those people?
Okay, so it all started last year when I went to London, or 2 years ago, and I was on the flight. And the flight attendant comes and she asks me, are you feeling a bit peckish? And I said, what?
What?
She's feeling a bit peckish. And then she goes, would you like a butty? I was like, what? What?
She's putting
peckish?
You on.
Peckish? Butty? Like, is she coming on to me? Like, what's going on? Like, I don't know anything, right? Apparently, peckish means like hungry. Like, but not super hungry, just a little hungry. And butty is a word for a sandwich, like a small little sandwich. So because of that massive language barrier, I was trying to be a better communicator, just want to communicate with them. And I would break out this awful English accent. Basically, all I would do is at the end of the sentence, instead of just going down, my inflection would go up.
Okay.
Right? And it was terrible. My kids are like, oh my God, dad's doing it again. Please stop. And they're like,
so wait, you developed like a vocal fry of a teenage girl?
Yeah. it was terrible. So here, I can barely do it in front of you guys, right, because you guys are regular Americans and my mind doesn't let me do it. But you bring in Francis Maxwell, you bring in Francis, I'm going to start speaking in my awful British accent. Yeah.
Mm. So I'll be like, he doesn't even have one.
Excuse me. Which way to Westminster Abbey? Like, it's terrible, it's terrible.
But you're not doing it on purpose.
I'm not doing it on purpose. It would just kind of come out. And I would try really hard. And the worst is a couple of times I would catch myself in the middle, then try to stop it, and it sounds really bizarre. Then the kids are just shaking their head, and they're just like, oh.
Well, it's interesting because when people, English speakers, travel and live in different countries where they have a different accent, if they're there long enough, they start to adopt. And even English people coming here, they start to, like Francis. To us, he still sounds like he has a Scottish accent. But when he goes home, as soon as he gets off the plane and meets his family or whatever, they're like, ooh, hey, Yank, you know, because he sounds like he has an American accent to them. Although I'm sure he can get that brogue back pretty quickly.
Yeah, so people ridiculed Madonna for having a fake British accent and Gwyneth Paltrow, but now I sympathize with them. I feel their pain. You know, you can't help
Steve-O
yourself.
Steve-O and Madonna.
Well, another thing that's interesting, what I do when I'm talking to people if I'm speaking English to people who are not native speakers, who don't have, like, say, someone who's Mexican, a Spanish speaker who doesn't have very good English, but their English is better than my Spanish, I will often speak English with a Mexican accent because that...
Because you're a patronizing...
No, because
I'm just
like,
kidding.
If people speak like Spanish to me in their strong Spanish accent, then I'm not going to have more difficulty understanding them than if they speak Spanish with an American accent.
No, I get it.
Donde está el baño?
I hear you, but like it can come across as patronizing.
Well, I don't do it to an extent, but I wouldn't notice if someone's doing it to me because it's subtle and I don't speak their language.
Yeah, so my wife pointed out that when I speak to non-English speakers, when I'm speaking English to them, I speak slowly and loudly, right? Which also sounds patronizing, right? Like they're not stupid. But I'm not saying that they're stupid. I'm just trying to be very slowly, speaking slowly so they can understand what I'm saying. I'm trying to be helpful.
No, yeah. I think slowly is helpful. Loud is not helpful.
Yeah, enunciating.
Yeah, loud. You're
maybe
right.
Slow and enunciating.
But that's such an American thing to do when someone.
I don't think I'm really close to them when I speak to them. Is that helpful?
But that Americans, there's this presumption that everyone should speak English. Even when we travel, you know, to France or where, you know, all across the world, where the average American, if you say something, someone's like, they'll just repeat it louder.
Yeah.
And like the person, it's not that they don't understand, it's they're not paying attention. So you gotta be louder. And you gotta I asked, where is the bathroom? Just like, you know, this Laotian peasant is like, I don't know, you know. But I think it's unique to Americans. I've never heard of someone from France coming here and speaking French to an American, and they don't understand the French person just yelling it in French.
So I was very happy to see that everyone in London spoke English. That was really helpful. When I was in Germany, not on this trip, but on a prior trip a couple months ago, everyone spoke English there too. But in Italy, a lot of people didn't speak any English. Mm-hmm. So you would have to like gesticulate and, you know, grunt and snort and you know, communicate in some way.
What sentence did you need to snort to communicate?
So one of the days we were going to a winery in the middle of Tuscany and I got lost. Yeah. And the GPS wasn't working because there was no cell reception. So I go to the place that my GPS told me to go to. And it's like this little house. I was like, this can't be it. And this like Italian grandmother comes out. And she is like rattling off her Italian super fast. I have no idea what she's saying. So I take out my phone and I point to the phone. I'm like, I'm trying to go here with the address on it. She can't see it. And she's like, she told me she has to go inside to get her glasses. So she goes inside, she gets her glasses. We're playing charades.
This is a comedy of
hers. She puts on her glasses and she goes, oh. And then she goes like this. Right? She's telling me where to go, except it was all wrong. So it took me like another half an hour before I found a place.
Well,
but it was great though. I liked the interaction. It was like, it was authentic. And I was grateful for her assistant. I mean, she took a lot of trouble to go to the house and go inside the house and find the glasses and come back out and explain. She was just bad explainer, but otherwise it was good.
I find what's interesting is that half the time people give you directions, they get them wrong anyway.
That's right.
And so now you've got the language barrier. So you've got like a 15% chance tops that you're going to be able to get based on the indirections. Yeah. So like even if you do follow them, you're like, this is, I did exactly what I think she said.
Right. Or maybe I was wrong. Maybe she told me the exact right thing. I just didn't follow it correctly.
All right, let's go on to the second question. Next, Irma, please.
What was the worst thing about London? High cost of transportation, crappy food, massive crowds everywhere, or Steve's British accent?
I'm gonna guess this one.
I'm gonna guess. This is hard.
All right.
Bring back up the graphic.
Let's bring back the graphic.
The correct answer.
The correct answer is.
We have a guess of B and aggressive C. The correct answer is
A, of course.
A, of course. Isn't that the best?
Yeah, it's A. Yeah, so the crappy food is a stereotype of London, and it is largely true that British food is not very good. Like, I didn't enjoy the meat pies, the fish and chips were the whatever. Like, they didn't even do the fish
and
chips
correctly. They had really good Indian food, right?
Correct. Their Indian food was excellent.
Yeah.
Thai food was excellent. And I was in this, like a Arab area, and I had some kind of like lamb dish that was outstanding. It was, so there were good meals to be had.
So isn't it amazing, like when you welcome people into your borders, the amazing thing that they bring to your culture?
They add to your culture. Yeah. Shocking. Mm-hmm.
You don't want to make America great again.
Oh, you got me.
it was great.
Make America great food again.
All right, so here's how the Brits do the fish and chips. Okay. In America, you just take a fillet of the fish and then you fry it in batter. And when you have it, it tastes like fish, but doesn't look like fish. It's like a nice rectangular block or whatever, or a strip. In England, the fish and chips that I was getting, they were gigantic, and they're gigantic because it's the whole damn fish, okay? So they debone most of it, but you get like a little portion of the tail and all this.
No, I don't like that.
It wasn't as good. And it's not properly seasoned. You should salt the fish before you put the batter on it and fry it. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, you gotta dip it in something or you gotta put salt on the top, but the salt just falls off the batter. Anyway, very, very
unhealthy. Was it served in a newspaper like it's supposed to be?
It was. So we went to a pub called Hung, Drawn, and Quartered. It's from the 1600s.
Wow. So
that's how long it's been open. It's been updated since. But but that's
how the Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Wi-Fi was terrible all around. But it's right next to the Tower of London. And it was like an experience. But it was very disappointing. I got the meat pie. And the whole time I was eating, I was thinking about Walder Frey.
Yeah.
I was waiting to cut a finger.
Right when you said that, that's what I was thinking about.
So crappy food, yes, there's crappy food. But there's also very good food. So by the way, the best food I had was in the Borough Market. The Borough Market is it's like an open air marketplace right at the foot of the London Bridge. That's where the terrorists attacked. After they ran over people on the London Bridge, they got out, they went to the Borough Market and were stabbing people and were there just not too long afterwards. It's very sad to think that happened there. The Borough Market is great because they have so many different types of food there. So this is why I got so fat. I had paella.
You were blaming the gelato before. Wait a minute, hang on.
Gelato was only part of the problem. I also ate too much of everything else. So I had paella, and then I had this like great Spanish ham. And I didn't know pig's legs were so long, but they had the entire leg like stretched on this rack that was cured, and they just like give you like a little slice right off of it. yes, you guys think it's gross, it's delicious. Are you guys both vegetarians? You're a pescatarian?
I'm veganish.
You're veganish, yeah.
Are you a vegetarian?
Yes.
Yeah. It's great. Plus all kinds of other great food. So crappy food, not so much true. It's not that true. But the other one, and the crowds. Yeah, it's a city. Deal with it. New York is crowded too. Mm. And there's certain pockets that are nice, like with Notting Hill walked around. There was a bookstore there that had a sign. This is not the bookstore from the movie, right? It was great. Went to some of the gardens. It's all pleasant. But the high cost of transportation was unacceptable. It's so expensive to get anywhere in London because their subway, which they call the tube, it's £5 per person. So I have a family of five. So that's the,
like $7?
Yeah, that's like $7. It's like $35 per one-way trip. So if we go anywhere, it's $70 minimum. And if you take a cab or whatever else, it adds up very quickly. So we're dropping $100 a day on just transportation.
How walkable is it?
It's a big city.
It's a big city, so we walked a lot. But still, you can only walk so much.
Right.
And the other thing that was kind of scary was the walking. A, it's congested. Number two, I'm not used to the cars being on the left side of the road.
Yeah, you gotta look left first.
So in the US, when you're crossing a street, you look left and there's no car. You start going into the street, then you look right to make sure there's no car on the other side, and you make it across. But here, it's the opposite, and you're just not used to it.
Right.
So a couple of times, I almost stepped out in front of traffic, and there was one incident where this American woman, she did walk out the street, and just then a bus came out of the corner, and she would have been dead. But this British guy, he literally screamed out loud and grabbed her by the back of her like hair and neck almost and just pulled her back. And he saved her life. She would have been dead for sure. And she was like, thank you.
This is the United, if that happened in the United States.
She would have sued him.
She would have sued him.
but the transportation was so expensive. One day we had to take a car from London to Bath, which is a city about hour and a half, 2 hours away. And that trip there and back was like $450. I mean, just for that trip. It was crazy.
So how did the Londoners do it? What do they have, passes or something that would make it cheaper for them?
Yeah, so like,
there must be some way you can buy some sort of, you know, week-long pass that makes it cheaper.
Everything is so expensive in London, and that's why people have a hard time living there. And if you aren't part of the super elite wealthy, you feel it. You feel it every single day with the high cost of transportation, food, and everything else. So a lot of people commute into London from like an hour or 2 hours outside of the city. And when they get an annual train pass, that thing costs like $12,000. It's a crazy amount of money. So transportation costs in London are out of control. Worst thing about it.
What solution do the tourist or whatever bureaus or whoever it is that you're working through, what do they recommend to keep your transportation costs down? Just go to one place and just explore that one area extensively and just don't travel a lot?
I don't know.
Do they have those like hop on, hop off buses?
They probably do. And
the double deckers.
I know they're trying to make it more bike friendly.
Mm.
But I would not want to ride a bike there. I mean, the traffic is crazy. It would be scary.
All right. What's the question? It's going to take us all the whole time just to do your quiz. All right. Question number three. What's number three, Irma?
What was the best activity Steve did in Italy? A, biking on top of the wall surrounding Lucca. B, swimming in the Mediterranean in Cinque Terre. C, a private cooking lessons and dinner at a Tuscan vineyard. D, tweeting 80 song lyric puns with Malcolm.
See, now that's not just for Italy, though. So I'm not going to guess that one.
Yeah, D is a trick question. It's a trick answer because that's the correct answer, but it's not relative.
Didn't do that while you were in Italy, did we? I don't think so. All right, I guess I'm going to.
All right, so
I think you're right.
B and C. Let's see the answers again.
Hannah's right.
All right, so A is not the correct answer because I didn't actually bike. We ran out of time, but I wanted to. Lucca is an awesome, awesome city, about half an hour away from Florence, maybe 45 minutes.
You're supposed to do this after you give us the answer.
Oh, I'm sorry. The correct answer is B.
Oh!
I've lost every single one.
Sorry,
Adam.
Sucked.
Yeah. So.
So
I highly recommend Lucca. It's better than Florence. It's like a calm, cuter, charming version of Florence. Because Florence is overrun with
But if you want to see
tourists.
Great art and so on and so forth, you got to go to the Uffizi and you got to.
Correct. You have to do all that stuff. But Lucca is a super cool city.
David, Michelangelo's David, you're not going to say that in Lucca.
No. Just look it on the internet. I just go to Lucca. There's a giant wall that surrounds it, but the wall's really wide. So on top of the wall is a path. So you can take a bike around the city. Very cool. So I wanted to do that, but didn't get to do that. C, we actually did that. We went to Tuscan Vineyard. It was amazing.
You eventually got there.
Yeah, we got there. And the guy was Francesco. And his common-law wife was Isabella. They had a little boy. And they cooked for us. We had private cooking lessons with them. They make their own olive oil. They make their own wine. They do truffle hunting. They have this huge dog that kills all the neighboring cats and sometimes takes on deer. And
for
the kids,
fun or for, just, is there a reason?
The dog is just a killer, but he's so gentle with humans. He's such a good dog. And then the kids got to pick their own vegetables for the cooking. It was great. And then he has this beautiful pool where the kids can hang out. And then he has behind his main house, there's a little complex that he rents out. So it's awesome.
How did you find out about this?
We were traveling with another family, and the mom from the other family found out about it somehow.
Because this is pretty obscure. This is not something you're going to see in voter's guide or whatever.
No, it was really good. And it was like a lazy day where we just did nothing but eat and drink good wine.
But those are awesome on the vacations, because these vacations often are just like, come on, we got to see it. Right. We got to see Westminster. You know, we got to see the Westminster Abbey. We got to see the Tower of London. We got to go to London, you know, and just run. And it's like, are we on vacation? You know, this is worse than work.
That's right. So that was great. But the best thing we did was the swimming in Cinque Terre. So for those who haven't gone to Cinque Terre, you have to go. It is spectacular. So Cinque means five, and Terre means earth or whatever.
It's five cities. It's five towns.
It's five towns along the coast, and it's like carved right into the hills. And so we went to the first town, had an amazing lunch. Then we took the train. It's like a 2-minute train ride to the second town, and that town is Manarola, and there's a giant rock that juts out of the water, and the beach is right there. It's just all connected. Like you walk 2 minutes and you're at the beach from the train station, and people are jumping off the rock into the water. People are swimming around.
Not like refugees, for fun, recreation.
It was beautiful.
Steve even jumped himself.
I did.
He and his fat ass. You hold himself up on a rock and jumped.
So I was gonna include that picture, except it's an action shot, so you can see my fat like rising up. Like so it's like I'm wearing a skirt. It's like a Marilyn Monroe photo shoot, except it wasn't a skirt. It was like my fat.
I imagine like you hit the water first. You hit the water, and then your flab hits the water. And it makes a double splash.
Just like that.
You
yeah.
You guys, stop fat shaming. I don't like it.
Sorry.
Are we triggering? Is this the you know?
Yeah.
We,
don't fat shame yourself. Don't fat shame others. Your body's beautiful, Steve.
Thank you. Thank you,
Hannah. Every morning.
It's harder and harder every morning, but I still tell myself.
I felt like I was in paradise. It was
but look,
really
I mean,
wonderful.
You may have gained 15 pounds, but you earned it. It's not like it's just like over the course of 6 months doing your job and there's so much stress and stress eating. You went on vacation and enjoyed yourself.
That's
and
right. I'm going to lose it.
It's your fat badge of honor.
That's right. Who goes to Italy and loses weight, right? I mean, come on. You're not doing it right. You got to go there and gain weight. And then we took
after my Italy trip, that's the reason I started working out.
Is that right?
When I was like 15,
maybe this
that's
is like
when
a,
I got into exercise.
You gotta take a step back before you take a step forward, right?
I came back and I was like, I should go to spin now.
My next trip is gonna be to Ethiopia.
Yeah. So anyway, it was amazing. Go to Cinque Terre.
Yeah, beautiful. Steve. If we had our act together, we would have included photos. But Steve was showing me some photos from Cinque Terre, and I've never been, but it looks like this quintessential, picturesque mountain, you know, Mediterranean mountain or hillside town.
Yeah, cars are not allowed there. Out of the five, I think one or two do allow it, but the rest of them do not allow it. And it's just captivating. It's beautiful there.
All right. Question number four.
I think it's the last one.
No, we have two more.
All right. What unusual item does Steve eat in Italy? Fried rabbit ears, A. B. Raw pork sausages. C. Squid ink gelato. Or D, the Olive Garden's bottomless salad and breadsticks.
Can you imagine if they had Olive Garden in Italy? And the weird thing is, fried rabbit ears is, that's an Italian euphemism for oral sex. So I don't know.
Is that right?
No.
I don't know.
I'm going this one.
I don't remember what they were, but I'm going to say this.
Squid ink gelato was the answer for both of you guys. The correct answer is raw pork sausages. So Francesco served us raw pork sausages, and they look like regular sausages, except he didn't cook them. They're just sitting on the table. And I looked at him, and he looks at me and he goes, that's how we eat them. We eat them raw like that. It's like, you're kidding me. He goes, we've been trained to think that raw pork is dangerous. He goes, it's not if it's done the correct way. So he's been eating raw pork sausages his whole life. His 4-year-old son eats it. And he said he gets them from his butcher that day. So it's against the law to sell pork sausages for raw consumption. So you can't ask the butcher, hey, can I just eat this raw? By law, he can't say yes. So they use a code. They say, are these fresh? And then he'll say, yes, they were made this morning, which is code for yes, you can eat them raw. If he says, well, I made them yesterday, then don't eat them raw. So I was like, that's crazy. I don't want to get sick here in a Tuscan vineyard. I don't know how far away the hospital is. So the way he eats it is he cuts the casing open, and then he uses a spoon to scoop out the inside, and then use it like a spread on bread. So I ate it, my wife ate it, and one of my daughters ate it, and it was delicious. It was delicious. Yeah.
Oh, I was really worried there.
You know, but like poor Francesco is gonna have like the Italian police. You just like ratted him out so hardcore. They're gonna be knocking. I saw Amanda Knox. I know how those police function.
Yeah, like I think 4 of the 19 people who are fans of the Friday Post Game are members of the Italian Carabinieri.
That's
so.
Right.
Sorry, Francesco.
Yeah, so that was interesting. That was probably the most odd thing that I ate. But Europe is full of like weird body parts of the animal. Like I said, in London, you know, they had the whole leg of the pig. So in the US, everything's sanitized.
Yeah.
And this goes back to my point earlier about the fish and chips. Here we make chicken nuggets, make fish and chips. We don't want to pretend that it comes from the animal.
Yeah, fillet of fish you get at McDonald's doesn't really look like a fish.
Yeah, right. That's the best part about it.
Yeah.
You don't have to think about it.
In Europe, like they have organ meats on the menu everywhere. Like it's just a part of what they eat.
They still call them sweetbreads though. They call them pancreas sweetbreads. I was like, I made that mistake once in France. I was like, this doesn't taste like bread at all. It's not sweet either. Wait a minute.
What if it black pudding is like
blood pudding?
Yeah.
So I thought like that. Coagulated blood was like something nasty that only Koreans ate because you know my dad loves it. And then when I went to Europe, I was like, no, everyone eats that thing.
Yeah, I mean, if you're coming from an Asian culture, to say that they eat unusual things in Europe, that's saying something.
I know, but that was the thing. I don't think it's an Asian thing. I think it's an American thing where we don't eat any of that stuff, where we don't want to. I mean, other than liver, you would never see like kidney or whatever on the menu in the U.S.
Yeah. Kidney beans.
Great point.
Yeah. I don't know if it's the Philippines or where, but
the duck egg?
The duck egg where you eat the egg that is like it's half.
Yeah, there's an embryo of the duck.
But it's not.
There,
yeah, right? It's like it's the feathers. You can like it's almost. But to us, oh my god, that's so disgusting. Yeah. But you'll eat the duck. People eat duck and they eat eggs.
Yeah.
But somewhere in between, no, that's a bridge too far. Makes no sense. But all right,
is that it?
Last one.
One more question.
Last one.
This is a tough one. All right, which European cities has Steve visited or will Steve visit in 2017? A, London, Berlin, Florence, and Stockholm. B, London, Berlin, Pisa, and Bergen. Or C, London, Munich, Bath, and Oslo. Or D, Addis Ababa, Doha, Montreal, and Nashville.
That's a package tour I know you can do.
Yes.
That last one. I'm gonna say. Where did you go? I'm gonna say.
You guys both said C. And C is correct.
Hey,
all right, so we end on a high note. So,
one out of all of them.
Yeah, so I went to Oslo in May. I went to London and Bath on this trip. And I'm going to Munich in October. So if you're watching from Munich, hopefully you can meet up there in October for Oktoberfest.
And I also pledge to you, our valiant and trustworthy and beloved 19, that I will have that package ready for Steve's visit in October when he comes back. Or die trying.
Sounds great.
But I'm glad that's the first I heard that you were going to be traveling again. So
it
encourages me to get on that because it's a high priority around here. I finally got at least a graphic for Dave Kohler's letter rip segment. You know, normally Dave, he didn't do it with you. Did he do it with you, the obituaries?
No.
Yeah. So Hannah was on Friday Post Game previously.
Like a while ago with Dave.
But it was
Dave.
With just Dave. But he doesn't do all my, you know, shenanigans. He just talks about obituaries.
We had a lovely conversation. He had the newspaper and he just talked about some of the front page stories. It was lovely.
Usually
he asked
when
if
he
I got
it,
the newspaper.
Yeah.
I did not.
Yeah.
I imagine, I don't know, like I see like you as his daughter. I mean, I met your dad. Your dad's cooler than Dave, but like I could.
Dave's
like
pretty cool.
He's like a similar
both,
age,
both
right?
Both ironically named Dave.
Oh, your dad's also Dave.
Yeah.
Wait a
minute. I have a great.
Two Jewish guys named Dave?
I know, it's weird, right? I love Dave Kohler. We have a great relationship.
Wait, Dave Kohler's Jewish?
We all love Dave Kohler, but you know what you don't realize is that there have been past instances where he's done the post game by himself, and it's just him looking at the newspaper. And you're like, well, that's interesting.
I love Dave Kohler, but for the first 3-4 years I knew him, I hated him, but then I grew to like him. And
but
now I love him.
You thought that he was sort of like aloof or distant or, you know, but then you realize, oh no, that's just his personality.
Yeah, I thought he really lacked social skills and obvious social like clues. Like what's wrong with this guy?
I think he fools us all. I think he picks up on everything. Ooh. And just.
That might be true.
He's catfishing us or whatever.
I have had conversations with Dave where he's much more observant than people give him credit for.
I give him very little credit. I like to give him a lot of crap.
The bank of Steve-O. No credit, all crap. All right, so now let's go. Let's move on because while we still have time,
yep,
to my version of Weekly World News. We don't need to play the opening again because I know that much as Hannah, I'm sure, would love to see it. The way we play it, the game, for those of you who have not seen this before, is I travel the globe, metaphorically speaking, online to find news items that are interesting or noteworthy but are not being covered by the mainstream American press and not even here on TYT. And then I create a quiz format where the participants, in this case Steve and Hannah, have to guess which is the correct, much as we saw it with Steve's. But mine, you know, I have 3 made-up stories, 1 real one. They have to guess the right one. And then Steve is notoriously terrible at this game, but I'm confident that he's gonna do well today. I don't know why.
I've been doing much better lately.
Have you?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll see if you keep that.
All right. I'm ready. This is my time to shine.
You're going down, Cranston.
What?
You're going down, Cranston.
Okay.
Let's go to the first one. Where are we going for the first one? We're going to Israel.
All right.
And there's a map so you get a sense of where Israel is. And in case you didn't know, there on the
it's the little country on the left.
Yeah, little country. So much trouble all the way on the eastern shore of the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
All right. So the first question is: Benjamin Netanyahu's former chief of staff, Ari Harrow, may soon reportedly do what? Is it A?
Go ahead. I just need the letters.
I need to give you the letters. Testify against Netanyahu on corruption charges. B, become the first former government official to appear on the Israeli version of Dancing with the Stars. C, become Israel's first ever ambassador to a Muslim majority nation. Or D, launch a chain of pulled pork restaurants.
I like D. I wish D were true.
All right, come back to us, Irma. We got an answer of C, and you're gonna abstain? And A. We have an answer of A and C. What is the correct answer?
Be B.
What is the correct answer? Is A. Hannah Cranston jumps out to the early testify against Netanyahu.
God.
On corruption charges.
I was so scared that all my fellow Jews were going to disown me if I got it wrong.
I don't think this is a point of pride. It's not like you don't know what, you know, a Seder is or something. One of the reasons why I wanted to do this story is I find it interesting that Netanyahu is potentially going to go on trial for corruption charges.
Yeah.
And there's like this is Ari Harrow. He's the guy who the former chief of staff. He looks happy, like he's about to testify. It's like, I wish I weren't doing this. So he was a former confidant and close personal associate of Netanyahu. We have an image of Netanyahu also, I think. There we go. And now their prosecutors are sort of tightening the web or the net around Netanyahu about corruption charges. And so this Harrow guy is in talks with police to give evidence, allegedly in exchange for a lesser sentence over accusations of wrongdoing in the sale of his consulting company. And the details of the corruption are not important, but this has been a big story in Israel, and you hear zero about it here. I mean, the only thing we hear about with Netanyahu is, you know, that he's close with Trump, or Trump has a phone call with him, or something like that, or maybe something going on with the settlements. But generally speaking, so I guess there are a series of high-profile investigations touching on everything from allegations of corruption in arms purchases to the prime minister's attempts to control the Israeli media, and on gifts to him and his family from wealthy benefactors. And among the people who have been interviewed, Netanyahu backers includes Sheldon Adelson, our friend Sheldon Adelson,
mm-hmm,
the casino magnate who, you know, spent $100 million on Mitt Romney and also gave a lot of money to Trump. I won't get into the details of it, but I just found it interesting that we don't. Israel is a very important partner. You know, regardless of what you think about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and why the news media isn't covering this, because from what I can tell, this is a pretty big story, and Netanyahu could really be going down, because this is the second guy who prosecutors have gotten to flip on him, and they're going straight forward. You know, they're climbing the ladder and getting the lower guys to flip for lesser sentences or for immunity. And I mean, I could be wrong. Netanyahu could weasel out of this somehow, but it seems to me that the American public should be aware that the news media is falling down in their doing right by the American people if we don't know about this. But
how long has Netanyahu been in power?
It's like a decade now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a while. He's managed to.
So I have a theory on this. Okay, this is whether it's Netanyahu or Putin or whoever else. Guys who stick around way too long, they eventually become corrupt. Right? It's just too hard for them to not. I think it's just human nature. And of course, maybe he's totally innocent. I'm just speculating. But I think what happens is you consolidate a lot of power. And you get a little bit of extra here, a little bit extra there. Next thing you know, you take it too far, and then you get busted at some point.
Yeah, I think the inclination is to want to hold on to power, and you move in a more dictatorial bent. The more and people get sick of you. People get tired. People start to blame you for whatever's wrong and forget about anything you did that was good. And so, but Robert Mugabe was, I think, pretty.
Is he corrupt too?
No, but he wasn't initially.
Did you read about the leaks from Trump's calls? And so we had that call with the Mexican president. He was like, well, hopefully if we do a good job, we could stick around longer than our terms. It's like, no, bro, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
And so already with just that little bit of power, he wants more. You know what I mean?
Trump is, he's been corrupt from day one.
Give him credit. He didn't start off as a man of the people.
But even good people who aren't corrupt on day one, I think if they stick around for too long, they become corrupt. I think it's impossible. You have to step away.
I think it's possible. I think that. So, but there can be.
There's a natural progression. Maybe it's not inevitable, but there is an inclination.
Yeah. This story frustrates me just because we get enough shit about being money grubbing. There's enough anti-Semitism. Don't add to it. Do you know what I mean?
Is this a Shonda for the Goyim? Is that what you're saying?
It's just frustrating. It's maybe that's why the media is not covering it. They're like, okay, they have it hard enough.
It's a question. I don't know what the Israeli press or their political system is like, but in the US, what would happen is it becomes super hyper-partisan where only the opposing party would go after him. Is that the case in Israel, or is this a bipartisan or multi-partisan effort here, or is it just one party that's against him?
Yeah, I don't live in Israel, so I don't know the answer of that.
You don't cover this on Think Tank?
No, but from my experience, I guess even just traveling to Israel, I don't have a lot of, I don't know where people lie a lot of the politics, but I do know that there are people who still like and respect Netanyahu, and there's people who hate him. And I think the problem is because tensions are so high in Israel, and especially with the world's perception of Israel and their conflict with Palestine and things like that, that it becomes sort of this all or nothing. You either have to love it and support Netanyahu and blah, 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 or you're anti-Israel, you're anti-Semitic. And I don't think that's how it should be. But I think because tensions are so high, that's how it comes across in the media, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, I'm really curious to know if it's just, let's say, members of the Labor Party. He's part of Likud. So if it's just Labor who's after him, or if people in Likud are also saying, yeah, he's corrupt.
Well, he's having defectors already.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the kind of thing where, that's what we ask about Trump. At what point do the Republicans turn on him? And do they say, okay, we can't? But it's often just a matter of public opinion.
I would be really happy if the case was in Israel that it's not partisan like that. If someone is corrupt, if there's allegations of corruption, both sides want to get to the bottom of it.
Rather than
one side stonewalling and the other side going gangbusters,
right?
Here, every Republican was so outraged by everything Clinton said or did, right? And with Trump, they're like, no, everything's fine. And vice versa with the Democrats. There's hyper-partisanship whenever they go after one of the leaders. I would hope that in Israel is better than that.
Yeah, I don't know. I imagine it's getting worse, probably. It's getting, like us. But all right, we don't have that much time. Okay. So let's move on to question number two, which comes to us from Colombia, which we all know is there on
South America.
That's right. It's the where Central America attaches.
It's right next to Argentina.
All right, what's the question, Irma? Officials are concerned about what unforeseen consequence of the recent Colombian peace deal. Is it A, a flood of military hardware and other weapons into the black market? B, widespread deforestation in previously rebel-held territory? C, public demand for a peace dividend dedicated to sizable increases in social spending? Or D, Ken Burns is threatened to make a documentary about it?
These are excellent answers.
This is hard, yeah.
I try to make it tough on you. I don't, you know. That's why we don't get a lot of repeat customers for our third spot guest, Hannah. I have to keep getting new fresh talent. All right, what do we have?
Okay, I'll pick. I was between two answers, so I'll pick something just to be different.
All right, we have an answer B and C. What is the correct answer, Irma? It is B, widespread deforestation, previously rebel-held territory. So this is...
I don't even read the answers. I go with letter A or B or C based on what the prior answer was. So the prior answer was A. I'm going to go with B this time.
So yeah, Steve tries to second guess me.
It's like
they call it leveling in poker. So this is one of those good news, bad news stories. Like, you think it's great news, right? But the rebels, FARC, held for... This is a 52-year-long war going on that they finally... arrived at a peace deal, but the wide swaths of Colombia that were controlled by the FARC, they managed, and you know, logging companies couldn't come in because it was too dangerous, and so they are relatively untouched. Now that they signed a peace deal, there's nobody to protect those forests because the government has not yet moved in, if they ever are going to, and the rebels are no longer protecting them. So there's talk how So conservationists fear the lush forests they occupied, FARC occupied, will be left vulnerable to illegal logging. And so it's begun already, but there are almost 3 million hectares of forest have been lost in Colombia from 2001 to 2015. But the country still, because of all this violence, has some of the largest swaths of protected, not intentionally, but the country says they're going to protect more than 26 million hectares, but they're also cutting budget for environmental programs by 60% for 2018. So yeah, that was an image. We had an image of some of the FARC fighters and the beautiful scenery there in rural Colombia. So deforestation is made more likely by the fact that millions of people displaced by the conflict could return home and may need to find a new source of income. They're poor. These forests, the old growth forests, and so. Whether the government is powerful enough and has the inclination not only to protect them, but then they also got to provide a job. That's the kind of thing that feeds civil unrest and war is when people do not have jobs. And so,
can I defend my answer?
Yeah, you're welcome to do whatever you
want.
Let me
defend my answer.
If you're Dave Kohler, you just bitch about the questions and the way they're framed.
Oh my God, I love it. You're one of those kids like, I need to argue my 97.
I need my participation medal because I know that when they tried to reach the deal initially, people overwhelmingly voted no on it, right? And then they, finally reached another deal, and then now they're moving forward and, basically bringing FARC back into the community. And I know that a lot of people, especially people who either had family members that were abducted or killed by the FARC, are really upset and feel like they're not being properly compensated with some sort of a peace dividend or something like that for their losses and for the struggle that they went through due to this group.
But that's not what the question said.
I'm just saying.
The question said public demand for a peace dividend dedicated to sizable increases in social spending, not reimbursement for families who lost loved ones.
But maybe they could use the reimbursements for spending in a social arena.
Let me just brag about my correct answer. I watched Narcos. I binge watched it during my vacation. That's why I got it right.
Oh,
I knew binge watching it would pay off someday. And it did.
But this is the kind of story I like to cover because it's one of those things where. The peace in Colombia seems like it's good news. Yeah, there are people who are unhappy about it.
But people don't cover it at all. I didn't see it anywhere in the news when they reached the agreement. The only reason I know about these worldwide events is because I listen to the BBC podcast in the morning. And BBC is good about being more global with their news. But if it's not a Sean Spicer mishap, then you're not going to hear it in American news.
That is why we need Weekly World News. This is exactly why we need Weekly World News.
I'm actually very proud that you already knew all this FARC stuff. I was like, what's happening? I'm just glad I got the question right.
I know FARC.com, but that's something different. Okay, question number three comes to us from Tunisia, is in North Africa. Of course, we know Tunisia. And the question is, Tunisian legislators recently abolished a law that previously allowed what? Was it A, members of the Tunisian royal family to own slaves? B, children as young as 5 to work 16-hour days? C, rapists to avoid prosecution by marrying their victims? Or D, camel juggling? Hannah has her answer.
This is sadly too easy.
And they both say C. You want to show them paying C? And the correct answer is C, that's correct. Rapists to avoid prosecution by marrying their victims.
That has to be the stupidest law of all time. If I want to marry someone, I just go rape her. Then I get to marry her. Like, that's the stupidest thing ever. It's a wrong incentive. It's like crazy, right?
You and your cultural
imperialism. I think it probably works the other way. I think you rape somebody and you're like, fuck, I don't want to go to jail. And you're like, all right, well, I'll just marry her. Of course.
That's what happens. Right? And now you're forced to marry this awful human being who just raped you.
Yeah.
But let's say you like a girl and she doesn't like you, and you're trying to get her to marry you, and she doesn't, so you just rape her. I mean, it's a horrible, horrible situation.
Yeah.
It's so, so awful.
You're saying it's not a really justifiable law?
I can't believe anyone thought that was a good idea. It's insane.
You might as well just say, well, I guess the point is, it's actually, it might be in a backward sort of way, a means of protecting the woman's reputation in that kind of society.
That's true. That's a good point.
But it's horrible. How about we just promote women's rights? These laws actually, they're under consideration in a number of other Middle Eastern countries. Mm-hmm. I think Jordan also passed a similar law. Hannah, you want to talk all about it? Hannah, you know. Come on.
She listened to the BBC podcast.
Yeah. This is on the BBC podcast.
Was it?
BBC Global News for the
win. Never invite her back. So we need to wrap up, so I have to speed up the question. So Tunisia has a reputation among North African countries as being the most progressive in terms of women's rights, but there's still a lot to be done. And this is a law, I mean, it's a good step that they've passed this law, but there's also whether the country is going to allocate resources for women's shelters and all these other aspects of the law. But this law will allow for the prosecution of abusers and psychological and practical assistance for victims of domestic violence, assuming they actually adequately fund it, and it's not just the kind of thing that they do just to improve their international standing and make it seem like they're doing something about it when they don't actually. So we'll have to wait and see. We'll keep you informed, keep you covered on what's going on in Tunisia. Let's move on to question number 4 from Switzerland. There's Switzerland. There it is, right north of Italy. You could have popped up to Switzerland. Mm-hmm. Maybe you would have gotten this one right, but maybe you'll get it right anyway. The question is, the Telegraph newspaper recently reported that Switzerland could soon see a rise in tourism as a result of what? Is it A?
I already know the answer.
The newly legalized commercial sale of cannabis cigarettes. B, more temperate winters as a result of climate change. C, decreased fees on numbered bank accounts for owners who make annual visits to Switzerland. Or D, clock aficionados flooding in to attend the first ever Cuckoo Con. Now we have our answers already.
Yeah, I think so. I agree.
Say B. What is the correct answer, Irma? It is A. The newly legalized commercial sale of cannabis cigarettes. Sorry.
BBC, you failed me.
Yeah, this was not a huge story. So I think we have an image of these cigarettes. They're called Heimat. And so Switzerland has joined in the League of Nations that have essentially legalized marijuana. I think it's a mix of tobacco and.
You know what? Pockets. I'm an idiot. I should have gotten that one right.
Yeah, never second guess yourself.
Because we discussed this when I was in Germany.
Did you really?
Yeah.
it's these cigarettes that they're. I mean. The Swiss Tourist Bureau is not saying, yeah, we're really hoping that a lot of people are going to come to Switzerland to smoke pot. They're saying, no, people are going to come for the lovely, weather Alps, and so on and so forth, and the Alps. But the manufacturer of this brand of cigarettes called, I think we had the picture, I forgot what they're called, but it's a
Humboldt.
Something like that. Heimat. They sold out immediately in the different stores, and so they're going to be rolled out to all 700 stores. Swiss company Coke and Gazelle, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, they're expecting to have do big business. And so if they're going to Switzerland, there's another, or if you're thinking about going to Switzerland, if you've done all of Italy and England and done everything that Steve told you to do, pop over to Switzerland. All right, so
that makes sense. If you're gonna like be neutral and not take sides, like might as well be like chill about it.
They mix some cannabis in with the tobacco, so it's sort of neutral, sort of in between, all right. So last question comes to us from Norway. Norway. Every time we do a story from Norway, I can't help but think their country looks like a sperm, doesn't it? So that's Norway. It's a part of Scandinavia, as you know. And the question is, a Norwegian TV network is encouraging viewers to do what? Is it A, Use television to promote family time. B, watch more sex on TV. C, watch less TV. Or D, have sex while watching TV. I don't know if BBC covered this one. All right, we have our answers. They say B. We got two answers of B. It's going to be a tie either way, no matter what happens. The correct answer is B, watch more sex on TV. This might be a think tank type topic.
Yeah, we covered not this specific story, but we covered like in the past how like a lot of these Nordic countries have really comprehensive sex education. And so instead of sort of hiding what sex looks like or having people go to like look at porn, which isn't necessarily a realistic interpretation of sex, like they'll show it more on TV and things like that to normalize it more. So there's not as much stigma there. You can ask questions, you reduce STI rates like that. You talk more about contraception. So there's actually a lot of benefits to having more sex and having these open conversations about sex.
And specifically with regard to this story, it's the broadcaster NRK, Norway's national broadcasting network. And they're debuting a show later this year, which is the intent is to give teenagers a healthier perspective on nudity and sex by showing intercourse between members of the public. And I don't know exactly how you sign up for that,
you have a camera phone.
Yeah, there you go. They're in the show. They're going to discuss issues of body positivity and sexpectations, which I didn't know was a word, but now
great
it is.
Great sexpectations.
There you go. No one should have that one. Well. But the show is searching for couples willing to engage in sexual acts for the show. So if you're in Norway and you're looking to, you're an exhibitionist. But you're right.
Well, I travel to Oslo every year, and I never watch TV, but I will start.
Yeah, forget about going to the fjords. Yeah. They're not doing this because they're going to show porn on TV. Right. They want to show what sex looks like in all of its uncomfortableness and between people who are not.
Don't have
perfect
those, like,
bodies,
yeah.
And so on and so forth. So you might want to.
I love it. No, it's great. Positivity, sex positivity. Woo.
If you have a fetish for people, I know. We should wrap it up. If you have a
Hey, you want some too? You better wrap it up.
I think they're like playing.
They're very angry with us. All right, so we do have to go, but we appreciate your watching. That's the end of Weekly World News. Hannah did great. You got 3. Steve got 3, which is great for you also, Steve. So that's a really good showing. Steve got like 12 in a row wrong,
which is like statistically impossible.
It's statistically very, very. They had a debate on the message or the discussion or the message board about a comment section about how statistically improbable it was. So thank you so much to Hannah for joining
for
us
me.
And really being a great addition to the
thank
Friday
you,
Post
Hannah,
game.
You're awesome.
Hopefully
that was fun.
I don't know if Steve or Dave will be here next week. I won't, but I'll be here 2 weeks. But we always appreciate your watching. Hope you have a great weekend.
Watch Think Tank. Go to youtube.com/thinktank.
And as always, stay strong.